Welcome to Season 7, Episode 3 of RPG Circus, the greatest show in gaming. In this episode, we debate slash compare contrast simple versus complex rules. And we also ponder game balance. Again, welcome to Season 7, Episode 3 of RPG Circus. My name, of course, is Jeff, and joining me this week is Ben.
Sadly, hello, hello.
Tristan has to deal with the fun effects of the weather in the northeast section of the country. And for our northeast section listeners, I'm sorry, but I'm enjoying a wonderful warm 83 high here in the Phoenix area. Right now with the lows in a sad but 51.
Mm.
So it's quite warm, and I wish I could send you my weather, but then you'd probably would complain about the humidity or something.
It's a dry heat.
Yes. Of course, you know, that's the price we pay for living in the Valley of the Sunstroke here. We get that fun 114 summer with no humidity, high heat, but trade-off. So there you go. So anyway, he sent us an email, and he has to actually work because of the weather, which, okay, I get that. So we're sorry he wasn't going to be joining us, but we got some stuff, fun stuff to talk about. Why don't we just get right into the news? Because there's just a tiny bit of it, and then we can get into the fun discussion. How's that sound? All right, first up, my favorite one. Gen Con apologizes for the 2015 housing registration mess. This could have been the story last year, but apparently the new housing system hasn't gone as well as they'd hoped. And I didn't
try it.
You know, I didn't. I'm not going to Gen Con, so I didn't try it either. Are you going?
No, not this year.
Yeah. So I love this. The system involved a large amount of randomization. Short, all customers who purchased eligible badges were randomly entered into a queue and then given access to the housing portal one at a time.
Hmm.
Gen Con claimed that these changes would, I love this, distribute the high demand on the housing portal over approximately 1 to 2 hours instead of a minute or two as in previous years. Wow. And
guess it didn't.
Says the wait time was considered longer than 2 hours, with wait times extending past 2 hours and 40 minutes. The randomizer was not well received, apparently. And apparently, once you were past the two-hour mark, the odds of getting a hotel in the downtown area were minuscule at best, is what they've described. See, this is just a I hate to say it. This is why I almost cannot go to Gen Con.
Yeah.
Because it's just, I mean, don't get me wrong. I know people. I mean, I've stayed with a few people in that area, which is great. It's fantastic. But, you know, last year when I went, we were planning on trying to get a hotel. Couldn't find anything that we cared for. And, you know, it's just gotten worse. It's gotten worse. And even, you know, it's strange. They even for press, they've changed the way the press was. I mean, they used to wait on the press.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Because, well, the press used to have their own separate housing pool.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah. And I think they changed that, too, over last year. And then this year, it's just, so now the press got their badges faster. It was pretty much supposed to be, if you had gotten them, if you were press and they knew, you know, it was, I don't know. Needless to say, I've said it before, and a lot of people are going to be angry with me, but Gen Con is getting too freaking big for its own good.
I've never had to book a room. I've always been working for a vendor, and they've provided rooms, so I've never had that problem.
Yeah. No, I'm just saying in general, I think it has grown past what, unfortunately, Indianapolis can support. And I don't think that there's a place in the country where it would be better supported, even. I don't think there's an alternative.
No, maybe Las Vegas. Or
I don't think I'd go to Gen Con in Las Vegas. That seems, although, you know.
Too hot?
You know, to be truthful, that is an interesting concept. I mean, funky people with costumes, who would notice?
Right. It would not be unusual in Las Vegas.
Yeah, exactly. At least that's what the Las Vegas commercials would have you believe, right?
Right, that's right.
You know. And I guess I don't know how to respond to that really. So anyway, there was that, and then kind of a little more fun stuff in terms of news. One was, you know, there's that, which video game developer is this? You know, they used to make a lot of video games for D&D, but they're now doing the one for Paizo.
Yes.
And the gentleman doing that had some pretty interesting things to say. Here we go from Fergus. I can't pronounce his name. Urquhart?
Fergus Urquhart?
Yeah. I'm sorry. I can't
pronounce. Let's go with Fergus.
Yeah, Fergus. Had some pretty interesting things to say. I think the my best part is you know, he was trying to explain why they're not doing D&D video games anymore. And even though he loves D&D.
Yeah.
And he basically puts it down to the problem is that D&D is attached to WotC, which is attached to Hasbro.
Right.
That's basically
so
what he said.
It's a massive corporate legal morass.
Yeah, he basically said something that I've been saying for a long time. Hasbro has no idea what to do with D&D.
Mm-hmm.
Period. And so apparently that's a problem. So I just thought that was interesting that at least I'm not the only person that thinks that.
The new version of D&D came out last year and people are thinking about what is ultimately going to happen with D&D, he said. One of the reasons we actually went with Pathfinder was, how do you say it? I'll just say it. We are having a hard time figuring out how to move forward with Dungeons and Dragons. That's pretty cold.
Yeah, I'm just saying, you know. So we'll include that link to that in the show notes because it's a little bit of interesting read.
Yeah.
You know, he basically, I love this quote, D&D is different. It needs more support. It's community driven. It needs convention, all this stuff, and it's not going to make $1 billion.
Huh.
Another thing that, you know, I've always told people about gaming, I don't know. It's like I've met people and they always don't understand about how the RPG market is not what they think it is.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I know that sounds cold, but the truth is that board games have a. You take any board game. Let's just take like one of the classic Euro games,
right?
Or what I'm going to kind of classify, Settlers of Catan.
Right.
I mean, that's being sold in Target these days.
Right.
You know, granted,
Barnes and Noble.
Right, Barnes & Noble, wherever. I mean, there's not as much crossover in that as we would like to see, but the shelf life for that game and the number of people that could be attracted to that game is a larger audience.
Right.
You know.
That's very approachable.
So, I mean, and...
Rules light.
Rules. Well, not only that, but it's like, you could imagine more people buying that game than D&D or even Pathfinder.
Yeah.
It's just that simple. It's kind of like, you know, how many copies of Monopoly are there?
Yeah, I see what you mean.
You know, so, you know, the audience pool for that, where you may not be able to convince someone to play Dungeons and Dragons or Pathfinder or Savage Worlds or whatever, but you can probably convince them to play Settlers of Catan, Pandemic, Cards Against Humanity.
I've played that.
Yeah, you know, matter of fact, my buddy, we actually were playing with 13, 14 people on his birthday.
Wow, how did that go?
Drunkenly.
Was camping involved or was civilization involved?
It was civilization. But no, we just, you know, the whole point is that in a game like that, everyone plays it for laughs, you know?
Of course, yes.
You know, so you're drinking, having a good time. No one really keeps score. That kind of thing. I mean, you follow the rules still, but no one cares.
True.
So.
True. Just funny.
Yeah, pretty much. And what was that? I'm sorry.
Oh, well, I was just going to say, so basically it implies that he's thinking that Hasbro's thinking that it needs to be a $1 billion title like Call of Duty or
I think so.
Halo or any of those things. Of course, those games all have a, you know, 1,000 developers working on them also. So
its target audience is larger. That's what the whole point is that the pool, whether people like to admit it or not, while some people may play RPGs, it's just not as big as the video game market.
Right.
Or, you know, and I hate to say it, regular board games or any card games or anything of that nature. It's just not as big. Now, does that say that we don't have a fan base with a lot of money? No. I'm not saying that at all. I'm just saying that even with all those, with all that money, it still is never going to equal the video game market. Which is
Yes.
why, which is why, of course, you know, Hasbro's like, well, let's make a video game. Let's get some of that money. But
Yes.
it's, you know, we talked about this with branding and, you know, the D&D brand. We discussed that, didn't we? D&D
Oh,
branding,
many times.
you
Yeah.
know, and, you know, the whole, you know, you ask 10 people what D&D is and you get 10 different answers kind of thing. So, you know, it's a
So
different thing to.
I'll give a good example. If you D&D or any role-playing game is highly morphological, if that makes
Oh, I
sense,
know what we
you
were talking
can
about. We were talking about the D&D movie.
True.
And how problematic that is to make a D&D
Right.
movie.
Right. Right. I mean, it's a very, I mean, it's rules heavy, but it's a very flexible system in that you can selectively include or exclude whatever you want to fit whatever it is that you're trying to do. And that would be true of all RPGs, I guess. But to turn that into a video game, you are deciding on a genre, you're deciding on rules, you're deciding on setting, you're deciding on everything. And that may or may not be fun. That's not really why people play.
Pretty much. Well, I think we should get enough of that and get into something a little more fun. As a friend of mine said, there is now a new ver there there's a Modiphius Entertainment is going to supposedly be producing a new Conan role-playing game, or as this guy I used to play with a long time ago, he always used to go Kohan. I don't know why he would change the N to an H.
Oh, I don't either.
He was a weird guy. I think he was an ex-Marine when I knew him, and I think the Corps messed him up a little bit.
Well, he does say by Crom.
By Crom, exactly. So that, you know, it's kind of cool, you know. I mean, again, it's one of those things. Conan has a definitely these Conan has had an impact on D&D in many variety of ways, one way or the other. So.
True. You
So
ever read any
def
of the books?
yeah. I
Yeah.
actually have a collection of his stuff somewhere.
Yeah.
So yeah, I've actually read a few of the books. You know, it I just find it interesting. So it's that's kind of cool. It's supposed to be released in the fall. And it's
Okay.
I guess it's using the 2D20 game system. I guess
I'm
that's
not familiar
something.
with that.
Yeah, I think I guess that's something that Modiphius Entertainment produces. Divide by Jay Little for Star Wars: Edge of Empire.
Okay.
And for oh, that's the guy that wrote it. He did Star Wars. Okay, so it's the
No.
cinematic. Oh, I'm sorry, I'm rereading this wrong. The cinematic role-playing rules devised by Jay Little of Star Wars: Edge of Empire fame for Mutant Chronicles. So it kind of uses the Mutant Chronicle rule set, I guess, modified in some way.
Okay.
That's the
All
way I'm
right.
reading that. It's interesting.
Yeah, my brain doesn't have room for another rule set.
You know, I'm kind of with you there. But hey, it's interesting nonetheless. So, which takes us out of the news and into the Kickstarters. And there's not a lot to actually to go with. But there is a Savage World one, which is kind of bizarre. PAX, a fluffy horror RPG for Savage Worlds. And I love the description. PAX is a small, fast-paced role-playing game of rodent adventure, horror, and obscurity. So apparently
So,
you play rats.
joins Gamma World.
Yeah, it's just nine hordes, exclusive rat families, populate the Rat Lair, each with their own specialties, values, and quirks. And of course, each horde knows songs about heroes and martyrs. Okay.
Of course.
Yeah, it just. I don't know.
The art is cool.
Yeah, no, I mean, I have to admit, they have some pretty interesting art. And that's. Wow, that one art piece. I don't know what that is. Is that a monkey?
It's a screaming rat. I don't know. I'm afraid.
I don't know. There's like this photo down below where there's three rats and there's looks like a monkey with wires in its head or
Oh, it
something.
is. It is a monkey with his brain is exposed. Okay, now I can't eat. Okay.
Packs in, the title under says Packs in Space, Stretch Goal Stuff. Okay.
Oh, all right.
Just
I'm
what you.
afraid.
Yeah, well, there's the horror element just right there for you. So far, they're only looking for a nice 3,000 goal, and they're about two-thirds of the way there, and they still got about 28 days.
Yeah, they'll make it.
Yeah, I don't think that'll be a problem. See, these small ones, this stuff is like few materials, enough to publish it.
Yeah.
Yeah, enough interest, not too bad. And okay, what do we got up next? Oh yes, another one for our fun UK listeners is the Mask of Gnarlathotep companion for Call of Cthulhu. So someone actually is making an essential reference companion to the RPG game campaign, The Mask of Gnarlathotep.
Wow, that's for
Information,
diehards.
advice, and adventures in one huge volume. Is there a current version of I forget. It's like
I
since its
don't
release
know.
in 1984, that's how long that campaign setting, our adventure, has been out. That's a long time, and people are still making stuff for it. And
Well, it looks like from reading the description, there's a website that's must be some sort of message board, been in operation for 20 years. And well, maybe it's a fundraiser. Yeah, it's a fundraiser for the website, really.
Yeah, still kind of cool. Get like an actual print material. So, again, if that's your thing, there you go. I mean, it's not too bad. £15 gets you the PDF, or which I forget what the pound to US conversion is.
It's like $1.50, $1.25,
Yeah.
something like that.
Still not too bad.
No, that's reasonable. If I were a member of the board, it's the kind of thing I would support, even if I didn't.
Yeah, I mean, they've already reached their goal. They were only asking for 6,000 pounds, and they're almost at 20,000 pounds.
Oh, now they have a performance problem.
Now they have a performance problem.
Now they have to deliver.
Looks like they're saying for anything postage wise, they're asking for about 8 pounds in shipping to the U.S.
It's not too bad.
Yeah, that's not bad at all. Now, whether it sits on a dock for a while, no. It's another story.
Custom.
Customs. Like I said, the dock. No.
Bribery might have been
You know,
involved.
th so the next one we have up is actually a supplement to a
Oh.
game that I haven't heard, Eldara, a steampunk renaissance. I mean, so th this is the Traveler's Guide to Eldara.
Pen and paper tabletop RPG set in a detailed fantasy world at the birth of its steampunk era. So, right at the beginning of industrialization, I'm guessing.
I don't really know.
Classic Tolkien fantasy with Renaissance ideals of art, philosophy, and invention. Actually, that's pretty curious.
Yeah,
That's
I
an
mean,
interesting combo.
my whole point is I'd never heard of the core rulebook before, so. But I
Yeah.
figured if any of our listeners had, they probably should know that there's a supplement for it that's out there. What are they asking for? Let's see, $15 for the PDF. And soft cover is $40.
And
And
they're about a
if you want the hardcover, it's like
quarter of the
60.
way.
Yeah, I mean, they still got 27 days. This is fairly new. I mean,
Yeah.
they're asking $7,500 US. They got about a little over 2 grand. Yeah, I would not be I would be surprised if they didn't make it. They probably will, because that seems like a long time. They might not.
Yeah, I would think
If
if
they
the
don't,
art.
it'll be pretty damn close. This would be my guess. And to kind of go along with I guess what I want to, not necessarily steampunk thing, but kind of a little bit more enlightened, non-medieval, we have 28 millimeter Renaissance dwarves.
Who doesn't like a good dwarf mini?
So a unit of 12 dwarves in Renaissance costume. So again, this is another actual UK one because it's listed in pounds. They're only asking for 750 pounds, and they got about 171 pounds.
Wow.
So I don't see anything about shipping to the US. He probably should have that in his thing. It says ships anywhere in the world.
Oh,
So,
does say that.
and for the whole full set of 12 dwarves, it's only 14 pounds. That ain't actually that bad.
No, that's not bad at
And
all.
6 pounds just for five. That's
No,
actually
that's not bad at
that's
all.
actually pretty reasonable.
Are they injection? Mold
So that's what I
injection?
wanted to look at.
They look like resin.
Well, that could be the just the green.
True.
That's what that looks like. That looks like it's the green for that. It does, you know, I actually have to so yeah, that's the master.
Postage outside EU is our biggest problem.
So we repaired a possible weight. Yeah. I think that's the only his only problem with running this Kickstarter is he does not have enough information.
Yeah.
So, still interesting.
Indeed.
I mean, he already has eight backers. I always think, even though I don't use miniatures because I'm not playing in a tabletop game right now, I just love minis.
I do too.
So the last one up is kind of what I'm going to call a curiosity value. I kind of see the need for it, but I kind of, when I first looked at them, I'm like, really? The on-target laser designator for line of sight and firing arcs.
It would be great in squad leader.
You know, and I only bring this up because it's like I remember my buddies playing D&D, one of the D&D miniature, I think it was the D&D miniature games, and they would use an actual laser pointer they'd put on the table to try to figure out line of sight stuff.
Yeah.
And this one looks like you don't actually have to lay it on the table. It looks like it just has a beam, you know, a line
A
beam.
wide band,
Yeah.
yeah. Or it's oscillating or something. Yeah, it looks like they're holding it about 18 inches above the table.
Yeah. So it kind of spreads out. You know, and I guess really this is really used for miniatures, especially if you use miniatures without like grid maps or something.
Yeah.
I think that's what this is really for. Because when I first looked at it, I'm like, this is silly. Why does someone need to do this? And then the more I think about it, it's like, okay, I can see certain times I kind of get it. And so right now, if you wanted it, 29 dollars?
That's not bad.
Yeah.
They
29
have a
bucks.
$1 million stretch goal. I think they are very ambitious.
And they're almost, I mean, I guess it's in Canada because it's CAD is what
Yeah.
their dollars are, so Canadian dollars. They're almost at it. They're only asking for 10,000 Canadian dollars, and they're at nine, almost 9,946.
Yeah, they'll make it.
So I'm pretty sure that, and they still got 18 days to go. You know, I like I said, it was one of those weird things. Like, I don't know why the hell you'd ever use this. I'm like, then I started looking at the photos, and I started thinking about it. It's like, oh, okay, I get it. It's if you don't really have hex grids, or I guess, you know, if you just wanted to be cool. So yeah, beam shape is a line, fan angle 90 degrees. So yeah, you hold it above the table.
You have to admit, if you were playing the Star Wars combat game, it would just be cool to
Yeah. No. I know. Extra batteries. That's an add-on. You can get some extra LR44 batteries.
I don't even know what that is.
That's just a one of the button battery. One of
Oh,
some type of
okay.
button battery.
Yeah. Well,
How do I know that, people? Even though
I
I know
don't
that people.
know.
Because that's the only thing that fits in a cylinder. You know, especially since there's two of them in there, it's like, it's not those lithium suckers. So, it's definitely,
Yeah.
you know, just a couple of button batteries, I'm sure. By the way, in case anyone's ever curious, there actually is a spec for a, you know how, you know, you have C batteries, D batteries, double A's, triple A's.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there actually was a B battery designation at one point.
I did not know that.
Yeah. I was always curious. I looked that up.
What is the big battery called that's like an 8-pack of D's? But it's got a, it looks like an 8, it's the size of a, of 4, of 4 D's on top of 4 D's. But what is that one called? Oh.
The 6-volt battery that's square?
Yeah.
With the little prongs on it?
Yeah.
Yeah, just, it's a 6-volt battery. I don't know. I don't, it has a designation, I'm sure.
I'm sure.
But it's 6 volts. It's the one that, you know, when I was in elementary school, they would use to help you learn about a little bit about electricity.
Oh, yeah. It's whatever.
Because, you know, you'd hook it up in parallel, or you'd hook it up in series.
Whatever junior high lab used to.
Yeah.
Light the bulb.
I was about to say, almost no flashlight uses them anymore.
Right, right.
So.
Cool.
So let's get into our topic, since that's all over with the Kickstarters. People are like, God, thank God, the Kickstarters are over. Get to the meat and potatoes. And the first one up is kind of one that I was thinking about the other day, because I was curious.
Mm-hmm.
You know, with all the D&D stuff being released in PDF, one of the PDFs that is available is the D&D Rules Cyclopedia, which, of course, if for those that know, this was, you know, basically, basic D&D expert. The what was my D&D expert? Was it the companion?
Yeah, I don't remember.
Yeah, it includes everything except for the one that basically dealt with players becoming deities, the Immortal set.
Okay.
So everything up to that, and you know, I think there were some rules that were not in there, but for it, you know, it's $10 on DriveThruRPG as the PDF, which, considering it covers everything from, you know, oh, we need to run a stronghold, to it has its, I think it has a mass combat system in there,
mm-hmm.
and a whole bunch of other things, and you know, for a lot of people, that was the go-to rule set, because the rules were really, really simple. You know, you contrast that to, you know, now let's just take D&D 3.5. The complexity of that is insane. Or even Pathfinder. You know, you look at Pathfinder and...
It's only 400 pages.
You know, some would argue that, you know, D&D 4th edition didn't help matters at all.
I would argue that.
And, you know, I mean, some people would say, well, that's why 5th edition is so important, because it's supposed to be simpler. I don't know. I think it's all just... depending on what you want to do. And, you know, I mean, like I said, I tend to play Savage Worlds, which I think is a lot more rules light or simple. But, you know, I mean, because I think about it. As a gamer, I've gone from very simple to ultra complex, and I've kind of packed down at very simple.
Right.
So,
me too.
I mean, I don't know if this is much of a debate, it's more of a compare and contrast, advantages, disadvantages in a way.
Well, the advantage of simple rules is they are easier to remember, easier to explain. The basic disadvantage is if you have people that are rules lawyers, you can get into arguments about the vagaries or the lack of detail. So to me, that's kind of depends on your group, but I personally prefer simple versus complex. If you get into an argument, then you know, have the rock slide for that character, and they're not a character anymore.
Rock slide.
You don't have that problem, you know. But I mean, that's not really a solution, obviously. But I don't know. I don't find the complex rules really solve the problem, because they might use poor language, or they might be stupid when you get to the minutiae, and then even if you follow the rule, it's dumb. You don't want to follow the rule. So I prefer simple and more flexible. personally.
What I think happens, especially with complex rule systems, is people are looking for a level of detail.
Yeah.
You know, and sometimes that level of detail, oh, that's fantastic that you have that level of detail, but is it really that important? You know,
No.
I'm going to take, all right, probably a complex system, Rollmaster. Now, some would argue that there is not a level of detail there, but you know, it's like you look at character creation. It's like, okay, you spend a whole bunch of skill points to get skills, and you know, each weapon you use, depending on what version of the system you use, is its own freaking skill. So it's like, oh, long sword is one skill, short sword's a different skill. You know, the composite bow is another skill, and
Right.
you know, I have no idea how to use the club.
Right.
You
Even
know,
though I have all these other hand-to-hand skills.
or you know, it's like I have electronic repair, and then I have biotechnical repair, or you know that kind of, you know, it's like,
Right. But I don't have working with radio.
well, you know, and sometimes that it's kind of like, you know, it's like sometimes there's head scratches. Like for example, Traveler, you can
Yeah.
have someone in. Especially in, I don't know how Mongoose is, but like for example, you can have a skill in engineering.
Right.
Okay, that covers like the drive systems, you know, the power plant and drive systems, but then you don't have skill in electronics or mechanical, unless you have electronics or mechanical.
Yes, and they would seem to be overlapping.
Right, you know, and especially in those a skill system that have a lot of skills, skills tend to start overlapping after a while. Matter of fact, Rollmaster was famous that in one of the Rollmaster companions, which I have several of, you know, I have a lot of different, well, I have a lot of them.
You are an aficionado.
Well, you know, it was one of my favorite games at one point. It's just not a game I have very fond memories of playing it, but it's not
Yeah.
a game I currently will play, ever play ever again.
Right.
But I keep the books around for sentimental reasons.
Check.
But in one of the companions, it had like this master list of. If you have this skill, then it equates to 1/8 skill in this, and you're like, "What the fuck do I need that for? That makes no sense. Why do
Right.
I
Well, that was an
care?"
attempt to address the overlap.
Well, that or just you know, it's like, you know, it's like, oh, well, if I have, you know, the use ropes, basically, it's like if I have the use ropes skill, I must have, you know, underwater basket weaving at like half that, right?
Right,
You know,
right.
those type of questions. Meanwhile, you know, it's like everyone's going like, who cares? Just because, you know, obviously players always want a skill, you know, some skill to be used in almost every, they can think of a thousand reasons why if you have skill in something, you could choose it. Where if you have, and I think that's what happens when you have skills that try to encompass a lots of different things, you
Yeah.
know, players want to be able to use one skill to cover several areas where they don't have skills in, even though they probably should.
Right.
And I'm not,
Right.
and this is not, you know, and of course, it's just not, this isn't just systems that have skills, although usually a system has skills that ups the complexity a little bit.
Yes, that's true. Yeah, like skill trees where you have some broad category and then refinement, refinement, refinement. And just being a particular level in the broad category gives you some basic ability with all the refinements, you know, and so on. But to me, it's complexity without necessity.
Right.
It
Well, you
doesn't
know,
add
and
value.
another classic example again is, you know, champions on the complexity side. One of my
Well, I
first.
don't even like making a character in Champions.
Oh, you know, it's weird. It's like when I first started playing champions, not a big deal.
Yeah.
I know that sounds weird, but the system, with all its flaws, really was somewhat elegant. The problem is that it was absolutely not perfect.
True.
And people complain, well, I can't make this character. I don't know how to, you know, I want to make a character with this, and I don't know how to
Want to make Superman.
well, I'm not even going to go there. I want to have this item, and I don't know how to conceptualize it in the rules because, well, because the rules aren't built for you to make that item. So it can't exist in the universe. End of story. Move on. You know, but people would try to break the system, or like you said, you know, they try to make Superman, and you know, Superman would turn out to be like 10,000 points or something bizarre like that.
Right.
And it's just
And
like,
unbeatable.
and unbeatable, you know, and it's just like, But the, you know, like in the original system, and it has some, like I said, it has some flaws. Like in the original system, a martial artist, if you wanted to take martial arts, it was equal to whatever your strength was. I remember that. There was like, I don't know, edition 2, 1, and 2. I think even 3.
I don't remember.
Oh, I do. Again, another one of those games that I create a lot of characters for. you know, and it's and the idea was, and the reason they did that is because they didn't, they thought it was important that, well, martial artists weren't supposed to have high strengths, was the idea, because, you know, the advantage of the martial art is it gave you, like, it allowed you to have
speed,
really high
allowed
you to have really high damage without being strong. You know, because that was the way it was. It's like, oh, you know, let's say my strength is 10, so it costs me 10 points for martial arts. Well, I can increase the multiplier on the damage by paying that again. It's like you could take martial arts multiple times and it would increase your damage multiplier every time you, that you did it.
Right.
You know, okay, that's fantastic. But then, of course, somewhere along the lines, I was like, well, but what martial art do I know? Does it matter? And then so... but, you know, I mean, and for, you know, and then they had like this, and then eventually, you know, they, you know, once you get to somewhere along the line, they produced a game that, you know, martial arts didn't work that way. Instead, it's like martial arts were 10 points apiece. And, you know, I think that was Danger International, what you, their original, originally was called Espionage, you know, where, you know, so now martial arts had like a basic package and an advanced package. And, you know, so you could spend 20 points to get the basic and advanced, you know, did, you know, again, they did it to, for that game system, and that just kind of ended up morphing into the other systems.
Yes.
And it got really complex. Again, my point is that, you know, a lot, the mathematics were very easy. I know what people say, the mathematics were easy. What the hell are you talking about? But in the earlier game system.
I was told there'd be no math.
Yeah, exactly. In the earlier game system, yeah, there was math, and, you know, there were some complex calculations, if you really want. But the characters, I don't think, were originally were supposed to be super complex. The problem is anytime you have somebody that has stuff you stuff they can make and calculate costs, they're going to try to squeeze every, you know, it's the gearheads. You know, the gearheads get a hold of it and then they complex it.
The well, yeah, I think all the systems have that problem. Is there's a certain elegance to them within a particular box, and once you push the thresholds of that box, they're going to break. And then to accommodate the breakers or the cheaters or however you want to look at it, you know, then you start getting the exceptions and the compounding rules, and I don't know. It doesn't work for me. I don't mind systems that are heavy on the detail with things like equipment and weapon selection and things like that. You know, if you really want to get all nuanced and have some special super terrific sword that has some special terrific ability that the other 200 swords in the equipment list don't have, great. You know, that's an easy way to do it. Obviously, it doesn't solve the martial arts issue, but...
Right. But, you know, it's interesting that even within the same game system, different settings for the same game system can add a level of complexity that's just you scratch your head at.
That's true.
And I'm going to use... I'm going to use Savage Worlds as an example. You know, I have Savage Worlds, I have the Science Fiction Companion, and I also have Interface Zero, the second edition.
Okay.
There's nothing wrong with Interface Zero, but the system adds a level of complexity to Savage Worlds that, to me, is just like, yeah, no. In my current game, I actually had someone who was like, how come you don't use the cybernetics out of Interface Zero in your current game? Because it adds a level of complexity I don't want to deal with. At least the guy accepted that, but, and a lot of it has to do with, yeah, they nitpick stuff, and I'm just like, you could. I mean, it's not like you couldn't add them.
Right.
But I got a little problematic when I was thinking, it's like, okay, in a science fiction game, okay, I get in the cyberpunk game, they want to go like, there's that whole style aspect to a cyberpunk setting. So it's like,
yes.
Well, I have this revolver, and, you know, Whereas in the science fiction back, it's like, oh, it's a heavy revolver. Who cares? You know
right,
what I mean?
That's right. That's
And
right.
it's just at a certain point, I'm like,
Or it's a slug thrower, even more generic.
well, they do have slug, you know, various slug throwers, but you get the idea. It's just like, I don't care that I have, you know, this particular type of shotgun. You know, it's just like, do I have a shotgun? Okay, then why am I just using the shotgun? You know, this go, you know, and again,
yes,
it's, you know, people are like, well, you know, it's like there's a difference between, yeah, I understand. There's it's like people saying, well, there's a difference. It's like in the firearm universe, you know, the real world firearm discussions. People go like, well, there's a difference between a 9mm round and a 45 round. I know that, but in terms of a game, do we really care sometimes?
Right.
You know, that's right. And again, it has to do with that level of detail. And I think that's what happens with the simple versus complex rules, you know, debate, is that people who argue sometimes for complexity, they're not really, well, let me rephrase that. I think the reason that games tend to get really complex, again, like I think I alluded to or even just straight out said earlier, was they're expecting this level of detail.
Okay.
And for whatever reason, it may satisfy the fact that, you know, let's just take it. There are certain people that make characters and they want to write a 30-page backstory on that character. And there are people that will maybe not write that much, but they want to, you know, detail their characters and game mechanics down to, well, the fact that I only have four toes, you know, gives me some sort of weird disadvantage or advantage.
Right, right. The four-toe advantage.
Yeah. I was just using that as be absurd.
I know.
So, you know, I mean, and that's it. I think sometimes, you know, it's and I'm not saying that's bad, but it's just like design. You know, it's like, matter of, you know, there are traveler gearheads. You know, because there used to be, and I'm sure it still exists, but I don't know, you know, for how much. But there used to be a Webring. You remember Webrings?
Yes.
There used to be a traveler Webring just for gearheads. It was the traveler gearhead Webring.
Wow.
You know, so you know there is a subset of people that they want those complexity. They want to. They're builders. They want to. You know, whereas you know. You take Savage Worlds, you take the ship design system, and it really doesn't care about a lot of stuff. It's like, well, okay, you start off with this size ship, and then you get to add, you know, that size ship can take these number of mods, and it's not really that complex.
True.
I can generate a character, I can generate a ship in that pretty quickly, or a robot, or whatever. I'm not, like, saying, well, this robot, I need to calculate the power required. You know, it's like they don't really mess with that so much. No, but I'm just saying. You know, it's like some people love that. You know, it's like,
can they track how many programs their mainframe has to?
Exactly. You know, it's just one of those. Like I said, it's just one of those nitpick things. And I think so. What happens is, I think when we, you know.
So you think that a equipment detailed level game is equivalent to a complex rules game, or are you
making
a differentiation?
It can be. Because, you know, again, sometimes the complexity is in the deep, you know, sometimes it's born out of a need. Well, there's no rule for this, so someone wants to create a rule. But over time, you keep adding complexity to something that you've built.
True.
So I don't know where I was going with this little segment, really.
Well, I don't think we were trying to decide it. So I'm saying that there's a delta between rules that are complex, where you were giving the examples of skills and how skills and skill trees can lead to an undesirable level of complexity, and I think we agree on that.
Right.
And where we might disagree is, I was saying that having a robust equipment list. So to use your firearm example, you might have, I don't know, 150 different kind of long arms in there, and
well, again,
go crazy with picking that stuff out, but it doesn't really, in my opinion.
Here's the thing. I don't think having those choices is necessarily a bad thing. I think, again, it depends on the game and the setting.
Yeah.
And I mean, even in Interface Zero, I don't think it's a major problem, but you know, if you were trying to supplement that into some other game, you know, like some other things, you're just like, does it really matter? You know, it's a question of does it matter at the end? Is it important to your game?
True.
So, you know, it's kind of like we use the word, you know, longsword or whatever. What does that really mean? You know, ask five different people, and they're like, well, this longsword is really, you know, it's just like it's a sword, you know,
Yeah.
or it's a bastard sword or whatever. You know, you use those designations, and sometimes you're like, well, that's not technically correct, and it's like, well, we don't care.
Right. Right.
You know, I mean,
Right.
actually, to
But
use,
oh, it's a claymore.
well, just to use an example, look at AD&D, the first edition AD&D rulebook.
Okay.
He lists a shitload of pole arms. Why?
Because he liked them.
Because someone talked him into doing it. They wanted to, well, we want this pole arm and this pole arm. And, you know, at the end
Right,
of
I
the
want a
day,
pike and a halberd.
yeah. And at the end of the
Yeah.
day, it's like you could have just listed pole arm for all practical purposes.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, it's just, it was just one of those, again, oddities. You know, it's just like, what did someone get talked into?
Yes.
So. Yeah.
Yeah, I remember writing a paper in high school on pole arms.
Really?
Yeah. I did not get a good grade.
I remember trying to explain heraldry to people.
Oh, did you use the lingo?
The heraldry lingo? Some of it.
I had a guy at Gen Con, because of the booth I was at, they sell some heraldry software, and he walked up to me and he said, I can't even repeat it, not because it was vulgar, I mean, just because I can't repeat it. And I said, what? Then he said it again, and I thought, is he like having fun with me? I do not understand. And he was describing his family crest in heraldry terms, and it was a very, very long sentence with many words that are known to me but unusual. And I was shocked that there is such a detailed language around heraldry. Anyway, it's a rude awakening for me.
Oh yeah, and you know, there's a college for every country. Anyway, but we digress into something that most people are like, why do I care?
Oh, okay. Fair enough.
But that said, you know, what's interesting is that this actually question of simple and complex rules actually comes into our other question for the evening, which is game balance. And I think, I don't know, it seems like we've talked about this subject before.
It's frequent.
Yeah, it's frequent, but it, I think it's a, is an important topic. And I mean, one of the things we've always, you know, we always hear, but you know, is like, well, what is balance? It's like, you know, one of the things, of course, with, especially with D&D 4th edition was, well, hell, he actually, even 3.5, let's even go to 3.5, and I'm sure it was other earlier editions, you know, even Pathfinder has this, like, well, this is the challenge rating of this monster. And of course, you know, big descriptions on how to actually create an encounter, a proper encounter for your party based on the challenge rating of the
Oh,
party.
yeah, I've had many arguments about the efficacy of that particular device.
You know, and so, you know, and so it's like, well, you know, so there's always that, well, what is actually game balance? What do we mean by that? You know, some people would argue, well, you know, it's like, well, you know, some people assume that, well, the game balance means that encounters are balanced. Well, okay. And then other people would argue, well, you know, that each class, you know, especially, you know, Pathfinder took this path where they try to supposedly balance all the classes against each other.
Yeah, 4th edition did that too.
You know, and so it's like, well, then there's a weird little power creep because it's just like, well, okay. You know, and I mean, I would argue that early D&D did this as well. People just don't realize it.
Yeah.
And the way how, and people, and for those that don't know, how did they do that? Because not everyone had the same experience points tables.
Right.
No,
That's true.
look at AD&D. You look at, oh, well, the fighter had a very fast progression.
Right.
You know, compare that to a wizard, and you're like, they're like, well, the wizard is 10 times more powerful. A 10th level wizard is more powerful than a 10th level fighter. Yeah,
Yeah,
true.
but he has a lot more experience.
Because they weren't supposed to be equated to each other.
That's true.
They really
That's
weren't.
true.
You know, if you just look at it from the experience points level, yeah, you know, at a 10th level fighter, you compare that to whatever level wizard or magic user that was, then yeah, that was just kind of a.
That was their way to balance it, I guess.
Yeah. Well, it was really weird too because, you know, there was certain assumptions like when your characters died, you didn't, you know, if you were fifth level, you didn't make a character that was fifth level, you would start off at first again. And the idea was that players, you would eventually catch up somehow if you survived.
Right, if they coddled you enough and
Some
didn't push you out front. Go around
yeah,
that corner first, Eli.
something along those lines. So, you know, I mean, and then there's like, okay, it's balanced because you know, there's not, you know, again, this goes to rules where, like, oh, well, you know, there's, it's ba the game is balanced because, well, I almost don't need a rule, a game master to make rule decisions or, you know,
Yeah, I don't
judgment
agree with
calls.
that, but I know what you mean. I've had that argument too. I think I can simplify this problem.
Sure, go ahead.
Play balance is, forget the encounter rating or threat rating or challenge rating, whatever that baloney is. I shouldn't say that. Some people like it. It's baloney to me. So the simplification, I seem like I say this a lot. It depends on who you're playing with. If the expectation of the players is that in every encounter they have a reasonable chance to survive and thrive or survive and triumph, if they play smart, or maybe not even smart, but let's just say that they have 50-50 shot, all right, of surviving a particular encounter, and they have that expectation for every encounter, then I think play balance is pretty important. If you have the expectation of that, well, you know, if we don't play really smart and fairly conservative, we're gonna die. Then I don't think play balance is so important. You kind of, if you're the game master, you set up the environment and the conditions and the encounter, and they may probe it. They may fight it out. They may think of something you didn't think and kick ass, and they may run away, and that's okay. So I think that's, to me, that's where the play balance comes from. I've never really cared if this character or that class was better or worse than this class. I mean, there was always some of that in any system where at some point some character just becomes really badass and the rest of the characters aren't. But that has more to do with the types of encounters you're doing. You know, if you're I don't know, if you have a cleric in your party and you have a undead heavy campaign, the cleric is going to do a lot of turning undead and be a badass, you know? I mean, that's just the reality of the situation. So, anyway, that's my simplification. I don't know that simplified it, but that's how I've always seen it. It's more a matter of expectations being in line with the game master. And if they are not in line, then you have a balance problem. But ultimately, it's the responsibility of the game master to set that expectation and supply that balance, whatever that balance is, whether it's a chance for survival or the opportunity to flee or, you know, whatever.
Well, you know, Call of Cthulhu, the assumption is that there is no balance.
Right.
You know, there's an old Murphy's Rule cartoon.
Okay.
Murphy's Rules. And it's like, you know, Call of Cthulhu, the only game where the highest survive, you know, the players with the highest survival rate have the fastest movement rates.
Run away.
You know, and I just remember the cartoon because it had this guy in a wheelchair and he was just like in front of the pack spinning the wheels, and I was like, that's hilarious.
What's the old adage about getting away from a bear?
What was that?
There's an old adage about getting away from the bear. I don't have to be fast. I have to be faster than you.
Yeah,
I don't know. Balance is that's a really we could talk about that one every week. We could have a balance corner.
Well, I think
It's
I think the issue is that balance in many ways is such a nebulous thing from, again, it means different things to different people. I think, it's kind of one of those things where it's like we think of, I think it goes back to, again, it's like, depending on what people are expecting. Some people are expecting, well, everyone should be, like, for example, let's go back. I hate to use, D&D or any of the, everything at a certain level should be of equal power. And it's just like, okay. But then again, that's also a little boring.
Not a little.
And it's, and I think the problem is, I think sometimes, you know what it is? I think people confuse balance with making things usable and workable.
Yeah,
If a
okay.
system works, the balance, and again, like you said, with a proper game master, that's the balance there. The system works, and if the system works and everyone's having fun, you do not have a balance problem.
Agreed.
It's when, one person's having fun, probably the game master, and no, or one player, and nobody else is, then you probably have a balance issue, and it may not be the rule set's problem.
Yes, or if you have a party that is retreating to town after every encounter, you may have a balance problem.
Oh, come on, we got to have healing surges that let the party survive.
That's true, but you know what I mean. We had an encounter, and let's go 2 weeks back to town.
Actually, this actually to bring an actual story that happened to light, that actually happened in a game I was playing where, I joined this party. I forget what the actual adventure was, but the party had supposedly trudged 2 to 3 weeks through the desert to this temple, or this set of ruins, and we're in there, and this one guy was arguing that, oh, we don't have the right equipment to face, I don't know. So, I don't know, like some sort of, I think it was like some sort of golem or something like that. It's like, we don't have the right equipment to face these golems. First off, how do you know there are golems? You're guessing. And two, it's like, no one, it makes no logical sense to trace 3 weeks back in the desert to the town and then come back.
True.
Why would you do that? It's like, time, as a game, sometimes we lose track of, we don't think time is a real thing in a game. Oh, it takes a month. Okay, whatever. It's like, meanwhile, nobody wants to take a month in real life. It's like, if I told you that, oh, we're supposed to clear out this temple of stuff, but we're gonna go back to this other place. It's gonna take us about 4 weeks to get there, and then it's gonna take 4 weeks to come back. And the bad guys here, they're just gonna wait around for us.
Right. Well, because that's what they do.
Yeah, no, that never happens.
That's right.
So again, sometimes I think that's where this, that it's just. But yeah, I got in a really heated argument with this guy, and I just basically had to turn to him and say, "Listen, this is a fucking game. Let's play." It's just. It was just.
That go over?
Well, he, I was angry. He was angry a little bit. I just said, you know what? I'm out of here. I got. I can't play right now because I'm just going to say other bad things.
Yeah,
So I
well, that's probably
left.
the right thing to do.
And yeah. So in case anyone's curious, yes, sometimes I can get angry if some people push my buttons. Conversely, the funniest thing was is that apparently after that he calmed down.
Oh,
Because
so you were
apparently,
the
what was that?
problem. So you were the
No,
problem.
What's funny is that he actually, everyone was having problems with him, but after I yelled at him, apparently he realized that he was being a dick. Great shock that was.
I see.
So, I feel bad because it's like, I wanted to play some gaming, and it's just like, listen, I just came here to play, and it's like. You know, like it's like I think it was something about we're not, you know, he was something about we're not equipped properly, and I'm just like, when are you ever equipped properly?
Right.
So,
Never.
no, exactly. You know, you never have the right equipment. So let's just go with it.
Yeah.
You know, I think this is where this gets to the sometimes the equipment centric play that we have happened these days is like, well, I don't have I need XYZ equipment. I'm like, really? I think that's why I like to play Savage Worlds, and I like to play it with more of a the cinematic method
Yes.
than with the method of, well, okay, well, equipment is important, but it's not super important. Because let's face it, it's
So
not
it's
like.
not like the Holocaust cloak in The Princess Bride when he's crippled on the wall and they're trying to figure out how they're going to storm the castle. And he says, "If only we had a Holocaust cloak."
Yeah, exactly. More, it fit me so nice. He just said I could have
Miracle
So,
Max.
yep. Go away or call the Brute Squad. I'm on the Brute Squad. You are the Brute
You are
Squad.
the I think we're tired.
No, that's just a great quotable movie, especially if you're, for an RPGer.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I
for
mean, it's
sure.
there are a few movies, like that. There's Princess Bride, honestly, Monty Python and the Holy Grail, whether you like it or not. And there's a few others, but those are probably the two most, for people who play role-playing games, pencil and paper, those are probably the two most quotable movies.
Yes, I agree.
Is there a
I
third that you can think of? I know it's off topic.
agree. Well, Star Wars, but that's not really
Yeah,
high
I would
fantasy.
have to say Star Wars. People have always, but I mean that's more generic. But yeah, Star
Yeah,
Wars.
and Wrath of Khan, Star Trek 2. That's
Oh
quoted a
yeah,
lot too.
true, true, true. Yeah,
Yeah.
especially even if they just say yell out Khan.
Khan.
Actually, a lot of the Star Trek movies, if I have to say, the last one, the last original Star Trek movie, six, the whole line where it's like, if things were equal, I would agree with you, but things are not equal.
That's pretty good. Is that the one with the Nexus?
No, that's the first next gen movie.
Oh, okay.
Generations.
They've all blurred.
That's okay, Watch them with more alcohol or something, I don't know.
Check.
All right, well, I think we've actually reached our time. We've actually gone a little bit over.
Oh, all right. So be it.
So we're going to go ahead and cut it off here. Everyone's cut off. Screw it. And I haven't even been drinking.
Me neither.
So that said, if you like to agree with us or not, go ahead and send us a note. Tell us what you think. You can send us an email at info@rpgcircus.com. You can go to our Facebook page, leave us a note there. You can go to our Google Plus page, leave us a note there. Just look for RPG Circus. If you go to our homepage, you can actually click on a link to send us a voicemail via the SpeakPipe application. You do not actually have to call us. You just click on it, and it will launch a little window, and you can hit record. And actually, if you have your iPhone, it actually will work with your iPhone. Actually, there's a little, I don't know how they do that, the company that does it.
I
That's,
don't either.
we'll convert it over to, I just know that their applet works with the iPhone, so you can hit the button and it will hit record, and you can record it, and it will email it to us, and then we'll play it online. If you want stickers, you can go ahead and send us that email at info@rpgstirk.com. I still got some of those, so feel free to do that. I'm more than happy to send those out anywhere worldwide because I don't know when it will get to you, but if you're outside the U.S., it's been pretty fast. I think at this point, I'm almost equal between people that I've sent to out of the country and in country.
Really?
Yeah.
That's good.
Yeah, I think that's kind of cool. And everyone's gotten them so far. So that's a good thing. Any closing comments before we go?
May you stay warm, Tristan, with all of the snow.
Oh yes. By the way, that actually does remind me. It's a closing comment. How's the weather up there in the Northwest?
It's good.
Good.
It's good.
All right. Well, that's a good thing. And of course, the summer will be coming soon for everybody, and
That's right,
so
not soon
I will
enough.
be dealing with the dreaded heat.
It's a dry heat.
RPG Circus is released on a Creative Commons Attribution US License 3.0. For more information, please visit creativecommons.org.